Good morning, everybody. I'd like to go ahead and call the Senate Finance Committee to order the 29th of February, 2024. Times 3 minutes after 9 a.m. Chairman Hoffman, Chairman Olson, Senator Bishop, Senator Merrick, Senator Keel, Senator Wilson, myself, Stedman are here this morning on the leap day. Happy leap year, I guess, day. And this morning we're going to talk about the current revenue and expenditures we're facing for the FY25 budget. We've asked the Director of Legislative Finance, Mr. Alexi Painter, to come put a brief presentation together for us. If he could come forward, we want to have the committee and other members in the legislature and the public kind of get a briefing of our current fiscal position, what we're looking at before we start in earnest assembling the budget so we make sure the ends meet, the revenue and expenditures, that is, those two ends. Mr. Painter.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, Alexi Painter. I'm the Director of the Legislative Finance Division. So I'm just going to jump right in. No need for an outline because I only have a few slides here. So this is the updated fiscal summary for the governor's amended budget. When I was last before this committee, we did not have the amendments. We just had the governor's budget. So the fall revenue forecast is the top line here. We're expecting the spring revenue forecast in about 2 weeks. So for now, we're still with the fall. Looking at oil prices and futures since then, we're tracking pretty closely to the fall forecast still. If they did the forecast today, it'd probably be just slightly higher, but not hundreds of millions. So we are tracking a little bit above, though, which is good news, but not a huge amount. So for now, I think using the fall forecast is a pretty fair number to use. So for FY24, that's $6.5 billion of unrestricted general fund revenue. For FY25, that's $6.3 billion. In agency operations, the governor added about $30 million in his amendments above the original budget. You may have recalled that the slides that the OMB director shared had a $20 million difference. The difference is we had already backed out some of those one-time items that they reflect in governor's amended budget, so that we matched their reports now before we were showing a bit lower spend than they were. Statewide items, there were no changes. The capital budget for FY25, the governor reduced the amount a little bit. That's primarily due to lower projected need for federal highway match, and then also shifting a project from the FY25 budget to the supplemental for a fish and game vessel. Permanent fund dividend, I would note that the number here for the governor, $2.3 billion, will likely be updated with the spring revenue forecast. The Permanent Fund Corporation has an updated investment forecast with new realized income figures. And so I would expect that that will be rolled out. We'll have a slightly different number. Again, probably not hugely different because it's only 1 year of the five-year average. And then finally, the last item on before we get to the first subtotal is energy relief. So based on the fall forecasts, that would be $110.6 million. If you'll recall, there was a provision in the FY24 budget that said that if revenue exceeded the spring revenue forecast, the amount over the spring forecast would be split equally between the Constitutional Budget Reserve and an energy relief payment that would go out in fiscal year 25 with the regular PFD. And based on the fall forecast, that would be $110.6 million for each of those two splits. The total amount, if you hit the top of the waterfall, as we call it, would be about twice that, or a little more than twice that, but this is based on the spring forecast. So again, or the fall forecast. So, you know, with the slightly higher prices, that may go up a little bit. Right now, we'd estimate that would add about $175 to the FY25 dividend. So that brings us to the total budget before supplementals. In FY24, that was $6.1 billion. And then in FY25, the governor's budget is $7.3 billion, the largest change being the switch to the statutory dividend of an increase of just under $1.2 billion. So in FY24, before fund transfers, we have a surplus. I'm going to go down these FY24 items of $416 million. The fund transfers, the largest of those is that transfer to the Constitutional Budget Reserve from the so-called waterfall, the $110.6 million going into the Constitutional Budget Reserve. That leaves us with $292.7 million of a surplus to spend in FY24. If we don't spend that surplus, it would go back to the Constitutional Budget Reserve and lapse at the end of the year. The governor's total supplementals, including the amendments, are $183 million. Of that 292, so what's left is a post-transfer surplus in FY24 of about $109.3 million. So again, that amount would be either be available for appropriation in FY24 with additional supplementals, or would lapse back to the Constitutional Budget Reserve at the end of the year. In fiscal year 25, pre-transfer, we show the governor's budget has a deficit of just under $1,996.3 million. After fund transfers, it's just over $1 billion, so $1,001,600,000 of a deficit in FY25. The governor proposes to fill that by drawing from the savings accounts, the remainder of the statutory budget reserve, and then $1 billion from the constitutional budget reserve.
Questions on this slide? Mr. Painter, could you help us a little bit on the post-transfer surplus deficit of this current year, FY24? Forecasted to be 109.3 or 110 million, 109 million. Wouldn't it be prudent to leave some of that on the table in case there is some revenue call on FY24 that materializes when they balance the books in July and August, September?
Mr. Chairman, with the way the energy relief and CBR transfer work, you have a pretty big buffer between the projected revenue and that amount, because if revenue falls short of the fall forecasts, the first thing that would happen is that transfer to the CBR and the transfer into the permanent fund for the or into the dividend fund for the energy relief would go down. So you'd have under the fall forecast, you'd have about a $220 million buffer, where if revenue fell short, you would see that go down before it would influence your supplementals. We'll see in the spring forecast, whether that would be a bigger or smaller buffer. But that essentially is your buffer. So if you spent up to that beginning of the energy relief, you'd still have that whole energy relief as sort of a buffer for, if prices do drop. I'd also add that with the amount of unfilled positions in state government, we have been lapsing significant amounts of funds the last few years. We could attempt to account for that in our supplemental by removing funding that's going to be unspent. If we don't do that, we would expect a large lapse again, because we've not seen a significant turnaround in those vacant positions. We'll see when we get audited fiscal year 23 numbers, but what we've heard anecdotally or looking at the preliminary numbers is in FY23, we had a substantial lapse, over $100 million of lapsed appropriations, primarily due to those vacant positions. So, yes, having some sort of buffer is prudent. I would say that between the energy relief and those and that potential lapsing money, there's a substantial buffer if you did want to spend that entire post-transfer surplus in FY24. Of course, if you're concerned about $1 billion deficit in FY25 and keeping the CBR whole, it may be prudent to leave it in the CBR to fill that deficit.
We're going to adjust that $1 billion deficit. Senator Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Painter, as you look down the FY24 column, community assistance is certainly one of those things that are foremost in my mind. Is that included in there? Because I don't see it. I don't know see where it's been put in. Apparently it's been left out is what I've interpreted that to be. Is that true?
Senator Olson, through the chair, yes. That was vetoed out of the FY24 budget, the $30 million for community assistance that the legislature appropriated. So that's not included in the totals for FY24. I addressed that in a subsequent slide, but that is a thing that could come that could reduce that $109.3 million. If the legislature put that in, we'd be down to $79.3 million. So it would be a substantial part of that post-transfer surplus.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Next slide, please.
Okay, so the next slide deals with Senate Bill 140 as passed by the legislature. So that's currently sitting on the governor's desk. And I brought the fiscal notes and made them a document that's available on BASIS because the timing of when we got these fiscal notes and when the bill passed meant that they couldn't be officially attached to the bill because the legislature didn't even have possession when we got them. Usually when we amend a bill on the floor, that's kind of at the end of session, and you'll see those fiscal notes in conference committee around the same time or right after. In this case, we're not going to have a conference committee for quite a while on the operating budget. So to make sure that everybody has these fiscal notes, we're presenting them now. These were prepared by the Department of Education, submitted through the Office of Management and Budget, but they just couldn't be officially attached to the bill because of the timing. So I appreciate the opportunity to go over there and put them on BASIS somewhere so that the public can find them. So there's a number of impacts of this bill. The first is the broadband assistance grant, changing from the 25 megabits per second to 100. That's estimated to cost $39.4 million based on the department's fiscal note. There's a $680 BSA increase. That is estimated to cost $174.6 million. There's a pupil transportation increase that would be estimated to cost $7.3 million. There's a change in the correspondence student rate. So currently, correspondence students are counted as 90% of a average daily membership equivalent, but then they don't go through all the multipliers. So with a regular student, they would go through the school size multiplier and cost factors and so forth. Correspondence students don't get that. So they get 90% of the equivalent of a student, but then also no multipliers. This bill would change that to 100% of the cost of a student, of a regular student, but again, still wouldn't put them through the multipliers. So they'd still, districts would still get less funding for them, but it'd be a lesser differential. That's estimated to cost $14.55 million, and I would note that increase there includes the impact of the $680 BSA increase. If you separated those two out, you'd see that there's an increase from the 90 to 100%, and then an increase of the BSA acting on that higher correspondence rate. And the next is there's a position for a charter school coordinator that the department submitted a $186,400 fiscal note. And then the other provision is a $500 per student payment to districts for any student who in grades K through 3 who requires a reading improvement plan. The department estimates that provision would cost $5.2 million. That's based on the scores so far this year in the new reading assessment from the Alaska Reads Act, the mid-year assessment that was made by that. So it's a pretty, should be a pretty accurate number because based on the actual assessment, there had been a number that we had put out in legislative finance of $10 million as an estimate earlier on. That was based on the MAP, the statewide assessment score, because we didn't have that data. So the department's number is using the same data that would actually calculate it on. So it's probably a more accurate estimate than ours had been. So we'd encourage you to use that number going forward instead of our $10 million estimate. So the total of the entire bill is $241.3 million as passed by the legislature. And again, you have the fiscal notes. I'm happy to answer any questions about them.
Ms. Senator Merrick.
Thank you. Good morning, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Painter, thank you. The governor mentioned in his press conference that there was nothing in Senate Bill 140 related to the Reads Act. So would you disagree with that statement?
Through the chair, Senator Merrick, I mean, it's not directly related to the Reads Act, but it's providing additional funding for students who are not meeting the assessment from the Reads Act. So I would say it's related for sure. It's not directly tied, but certainly related.
Thank you.
Okay. Any other questions on slide 3 on the? Okay, we'll go on now to slide 4.
Okay, so I showed that fiscal summary that didn't include Senate Bill 140. There's also some other items that did not include senior benefits. So that program is set to sunset at the end of FY24. This body has passed a bill to extend it. The fiscal note for that is $23.5 million of unrestricted general funds. And I would note there's one other bill that actually passed the House with a significant fiscal note that I neglected to add on here. It's the child care legislation that I believe the fiscal note is under $1 million, so it's not really that large, but there may be some tax implications as well that might run that a little higher. So not a lot of bills have made it through one body, but since this one's pretty big, it's probably something to be aware of going forward. Another item that's not yet accounted for in the governor's budget is the Alaska Energy Authority's electrical grid grant. So this is a $206.5 million federal grant that the state has to match with an equal amount. We could meet that all in 1 year, or we could spread it out over time. When we talked to the Alaska Energy Authority, they thought that this year they may need $30 to $35 million, but they are working with the executive branch on a funding plan. I would note that even if they bonded, which is one of the funding plans, if we went out for a general obligation bond this year, that wouldn't be voted on until November. So we'd miss a construction season if we didn't put separate money in. Another plan would be to repurpose some existing bond funds from another bond they have. That has to go to the bondholders for approval. You would probably want to put in, again, some backstop to make sure if they don't get bondholder approval, they can still do the work. So I think under most scenarios we could think of, if you wanted the work to proceed this year, you'd probably need to put in at least $30 or $35 million. For the Alaska Marine Highway shortfall, I think this committee's discussed that before. The maximum shortfall would be $38 million, and that would be if they receive the same size grant in calendar year 25 as they received in calendar year 24, and we try to run the same schedule in calendar year 25 as we appropriated in calendar year 24 and as the governor is proposing in calendar year 25, which is 7 vessels. If they're only able to do 6 vessels, then that would reduce the shortfall. If they get a larger grant closer to what the state is eligible for, that would reduce the shortfall. but as it stands right now, that's kind of the maximum hole. Going forward, the legislature would probably want to consider what's a realistic schedule, how much are we likely to get from this grant, but consider at the very least backstop language in case we don't get the full federal grant. We had $10 million of backstop language this last year, but that really only covered the difference between the amount of federal authority in the governor's budget and the maximum grant we were eligible for. So it wasn't really backstop because we knew we were going to need it after the veto of that from 20 to 10. The legislature put in a $20 million backstop. The governor vetoed it down to $10 million, which again matched if we got the full grant we were eligible for, which we did not. So if you want to add backstop in case we don't get the full grant, you'd want to go beyond what's in the governor's bill today. And then finally, there's 4 unions actually, because there's a new union, but there's 3 ongoing unions that are currently collectively bargaining that don't yet have new contracts. There's the Alaska Correctional Officers Association, the Alaska Public Employees Association Supervisor Unit, and the Labor, Trades, and Crafts. There's also a new bargaining unit in the University of Alaska that is for graduate student employees. They are currently trying to get their first contract in place. So potentially we'd have as many as 4 new contracts that could come into the legislature. There's a statutory deadline of day 60 of the legislative session for these, but often they're received after that deadline. You may recall a few years ago, Senator Stedman offered an amendment on the floor to add in a late arriving bargaining unit contract. So sometimes we've done them that late. And I would note that the supervisory unit, there's also language in a bill passed a couple of years ago for exempt salaries that the supervisory unit would the exempt employees would follow the supervisory unit contracts. I think there's some concern that the language may not be effective as currently drafted, but that would, if the exempts follow supervisory, that could potentially add to the cost. We don't really have a cost estimate with this because it depends on what's negotiated, and those negotiations are not public. But it could be at least in several million dollars or more, depending on how much they actually get.
Senator Keel.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Painter, on the grid modernization grant, I think your phrasing, I can't quote it to you, was something like the state has to provide a one-to-one match. Is that a requirement of the federal grant that it be state dollars, or could that come from potentially ratepayers who will buy electricity runs up and down that line?
through the chair, Senator Keel, I believe that it does not have to be the state. So AEA has to come up with a match, but that could come from other sources other than state general funds.
Follow up.
Yes.
Thank you. You know, my assumption is that there will be some split, that the state will provide some of that assistance. Are you familiar in terms of the timing issues you raised? If the customers pay a portion of that match, do they have the capacity to do that in year one, just with the timing issues?
Through the chair, Senator Keel, I'm not sure. When we talked to the Alaska Energy Authority, they said they were still working on potential plans and they didn't want to get ahead and, you know, say what those would be exactly, how the timing might work for all of those. So I don't know. They hopefully will have a plan in front of us at some point in the near future to make a decision on.
Thank you.
Okay. Any other questions on this slide?
Okay, so slide five is kind of a similar format to what we used near the end of the session. So sort of building the budget piece by piece from the governor's budget to how we get to the end of session. And this was requested by the chair as a way to sort of go through it in a different way than the fiscal summary. So in this version, we're starting with the fall revenue forecast at the top and subtracting the governor's operating budget and fund transfers and the governor's capital budget. That leaves you with $1.3 billion to spend before you've accounted for any other items, PFD, et cetera. The next category would be legislation passed by one or more or both bodies. So Senate Bill 140 passed both bodies. So that's a $241.3 million cost. Senior benefits has passed the Senate. So that's a $23.5 million cost. That eats into the amount available, gets you down to a bit over $1 billion, $1.037 billion. So then there's some additional items that I just mentioned we may want to make sure we have money around for. So the AEA grid project, the Alaska Marine Highway shortfall, you know, these are, again, kind of rough numbers, but if you pencil in something there, you'd be down to about $969 million. So if to that you added a PFD, that's the 75-25, that's the amount the Senate paid or the legislature appropriated last year. This year, that would be $914.3 million. So if you subtract that from all the expenditures counted up above, you'd have a $55 million surplus left over. That estimated to pay about $1,360 per person plus that energy relief check. So if that energy relief is $175, then you could add those two together to get the full amount that people would receive in fiscal year 25. If we paid the 50-50 PFD, 50% of the percent of market value draw, that'd be about $1.8 billion, leave us with a deficit of $859 million. With the statutory PFD as proposed by the governor, $2.3 billion, that would leave us with a deficit of about $1.3 billion. So, you know, we have $1 billion in the governor's fiscal summary, but once you add SB 140 and these other costs, you get to $1.3 billion. That's sort of your new starting point. And I guess I should say dividend amounts. So the 50-50 would be, we'd estimate to be about $2,277 per person plus energy relief. Statutory PFD, we would estimate to be about $3,500 per person plus energy relief.
So if we didn't add anything in the capital budget, we paid out a 25% dividend, we fixed the ferry, we helped with the grid, we got $55 million in headroom.
Mr. Chairman, that's correct.
I hate to inform you, Senator, at the table, but the capital budget looks like it's in peril. We have some work to do. So let's go on to the next page.
Mr. Chairman, so getting on to what are some of those other items that there may be demands for. So the first item here are items where there's some sort of list out there that has a full project amount. The governor put in an amount for these, but it's not the full list. So first is the Renewable Energy Fund. The governor put in $5 million. That covers the top 2.25 projects or so. The full list from their current round of grants that they went out for is $32 million. The school construction list, the governor funded the top project on that list. That's $4 million. The entire list is $260.5 million. And you can see the ranked lists on the Department of Education site if you want to see sort of, you know, how many projects a different funding amount would go towards. School major maintenance list, the governor funded the top two, the top two projects on the list. The entire list is $249 million.
That's a brief that he's... Come back on the record.
And finally, there's the deferred maintenance list. So the governor funded $28.2 million using the capital income fund. The entire list we just received, the updated amount is $2,182.5 million. The majority of that is in the university, about $1.5 billion. The university has requested an additional $35 million to deal with their portion through House Bill 236. The rest of the list, the approximately $700 million in the state, the rest of the state would go from that $28.2 million, presumably, although that can also be spread to the university as well, based on the way the governor proposed it.
And before we go to Senator Wilson, I think normally on major school maintenance, we don't fund the entire list. For those watching at home, that's listed here at $249 million. A lot of times we'll do $25 million or $30 or $40 million, go down the list and stop. So in some stronger revenue years, we may go pushing up to $100 million. The university, it's not uncommon for us to do $15 to $35 million, just to give the people a kind of a range on the, on, you know, kind of the standard flow of some of these bigger deferred maintenance items that we struggle with every year. Senator Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. That was going to be my question to Director Painter, is that can we get a sort of an average historical what the legislature has done in the past to just put this in reference? But I think you've already covered that, Mr. Chair, so thanks.
Through the Chair, Senator Wilson, we'd be happy to give you a historical look as well. One thing I'd note with some of these that we don't really have a set funding plan for school construction or major maintenance. We sort of appropriate what seems to be available from year to year. We do have the school bond debt reimbursement program that will, there's currently a moratorium that's been going on since 2015. That's set to expire in 2025, July 1st, 2025. So districts will be able to go out to bond and get some state reimbursement, 40 to 50% starting in a year, but they don't have the ability to get state reimbursement for bonds currently. But even with that, there's not really, we don't really have a formula for how much we fund. As Senator Sedman said, we have often picked a number based on available revenue. Okay. So other potential budget items here on slide 7. So Senator Olson mentioned earlier the community assistance fund. So in FY24, the governor vetoed the FY24 capitalization of $30 million. That fund pays out one-third of its balance to communities at the beginning of the year. So with that veto, the fund balance at the end of FY24 would be $60 million, meaning that the one-third of the balance would be $20 million instead of the full $30 million. What that means is that that program pays a base payment that's the same to each government type, and then additional amounts go out as per capita payments based on population. The base payments cost about $20 million, so the difference is really felt in that per capita payment that would be particularly impactful for larger communities. Another option to fund that would, to make up that difference, which the legislature has done before, is put a one-time additional amount in FY25 of just that $10 million difference, but then you still leave the fund short if you did that approach. In addition, the governor has quite a few bills. I think he's introduced over 50 bills in each body. This legislature. Several of them have fiscal notes. I would just note a couple of the larger ones. He introduced the Alaska Affordability Act that offers a tax credit that's up to 50% of corporate income tax liability. The Department of Revenue estimated that if it's fully utilized, that would cost $237.6 million of tax revenue. And then the governor has a teacher bonuses bill that the Legislative Finance Division would estimate cost $54.5 million. The fiscal notes that the department submitted, we don't think quite match the text of the bill. They include paying the deduction for for TERS out of that payment. The bill text actually says specifically that that would come out of the bonus. So we think that fiscal note is not quite matching the bill text anyway. But so we would estimate that cost to be $54.5 million in addition if that bill is passed or incorporated into another bill. And then, as the chairman noted, legislative capital budget additions and district projects are not included yet. There's other potential additions out there. University of Alaska is one that has gotten some discussion. There's an $18.6 million UGF difference between the operating budget submitted by the regents and the governor's budget. The governor provided some of their funding that they requested using additional university receipts that may not be realizable. So switching those all to general funds in total would be $18.6 million. And then the capital budget, there's a $27 million difference in unrestricted general funds between the regent's request and the governor's capital budget. Again, some of that's university receipts coming in place of UGF. Then there may be additional items that emerge in the subcommittee process. Could be additional reductions as well, depending on how subcommittees do their work.
Senator Bishop.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Painter, good morning. Can you go back and repeat what you said about the governor's teacher bonus bills and how he's paying for it?
Through the chair, Senator Bishop. So, yes, so the teacher bonus bill has an estimated cost of $54.5 million. I think the fiscal note is slightly higher. It's unrestricted general funds and would be a three-year program, so it would cost that amount for the next 3 years.
Follow-up?
Yes.
I heard you say TERS, something about TERS.
Through the chair, Senator Bishop. So when those bonuses are paid, there would be any money that goes to a teacher, they would have a deduction for their portion of the TERS payment. So, you know, there's an employee side and an employer side. So the employee side would come out of that bonus. The way the bill is written would have that be deducted from the bonus. So, you know, they would get the bonus minus what they have to go through TERS, and then they'd have to pay taxes on that. The way the fiscal note is written, you'd get the bonus, and then the state would pay the TERS deduction on behalf of the teacher. But that doesn't quite match the bill text, so they could be aligned at some point. But the $54.5 million is if we align that with the bill text rather than the fiscal note.
Thank you. Okay.
Any other questions on this? Here we'll go on to
just to follow up. Sure. You know, the addressing the same topic as Senator Bishop, the teacher's bonus, Senate Bill 97, the governor stated our work isn't done. And I think he's primarily referring to this item. But when you go back and look at page 3, when the Senate sent over Senate Bill 140, we had the $40 million, and the other body increased the other items. But I think there was a lot of discussion with this body, so I don't see where there would be room to address the bonuses given our current financial situation and the overwhelming support for Senate Bill 40 that was received by the House and sent over by the House and concurred with by the Senate.
On to page number 8, slide 8.
Mr. Chairman, so another item to put on your radar is fire and disaster funding. The state has not necessarily funded these items in an amount each year that equals the expected cost. We've seen supplementals for these frequently. So fire suppression, we have, I think, a $90 million supplemental in front of us. So the average UGF spending from over the last decade on fire suppression activity is $49.3 million. The governor's budget in FY25 is $14.2 million. That represents essentially the low year of the last decade, FY18. And so the difference between that average amount and the governor's budget is $35.1 million. So in an average year, the governor's budget would put us with a $35.1 million supplemental for that item. As you can see in the graph, you can see the blue is the actual spending, The red is the amount that we put in management plan before supplementals. So this is basically what we had passed in the legislature's budget. You can see that we didn't meet that need in any year. We actually increased in FY20 the amount significantly to get closer to, you know, that low amount, but we're still below the need in most years. The green line is the average spend, so you can see the difference between that green line and the red bar is that we've underspent, or we have $35.1 million less than what's needed in an average year. And I would note that, again, that 10-year average, this doesn't account for any anticipations that costs are going to go up due to inflation or other factors. It, other than the governor's budget, does account for an increase to firefighters' pay that he's proposing as part of this budget. So, you know, the impact of underbudgeting this is that we have routine supplementals. So when we see, you know, our budget has a $1 billion deficit under the governor's budget, that's plus the fact that we're budgeting to routine supplementals on this item. For the disaster relief fund, there's a similar picture. The legislature's funded that sort of through large amounts of money periodically and then left it as a larger amount or a smaller amount year to year. So from FY16 to 23, those are the years the department could give us because they're using the current state accounting system. The average spending, general fund spending from the disaster relief fund is $20.5 million. The governor's FY25 budget requests $5 million, so that's a difference of $15.5 million. I would note that we put in $50 million into that fund in FY22, and we've been spending off of that for the last few years. Based on the current spending level, if we keep spending $20 million a year, there would be a shortfall in that fund in FY25 with the $5 million capitalization. So we need to add more in the supplemental, assuming there's more disasters. That's the thing about disasters. We don't know what disasters are going to happen this year, but we can at least look at an average and try to fund that to avoid supplementals. But right now we're about $15.5 million short of that average.
Right. Senator Keel and Senator Bishop. And Senator Bishop.
We heard, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Lexi, to your point, and I'm glad you brought it up on this fire disaster, we heard a lot of, when I say a lot, I have to go back and look at my notes, but 2 days of public comment, we heard from firefighters around the state the requests for increased funding, right? And because they're losing crews to outside. They can go to the lower 48 and make more money than they can here, And I certainly have heard them, and I believe others have as well.
Senator Hoffman.
I hate to bring this subject up, but have you looked at the problems of snow removal? It seems to be a reoccurring problem in major communities in the state, specifically Anchorage, Fairbanks, and Juneau, and is there an estimated number that we could look at to address the last 2 years if that were the norm going forward?
Through the chair, Senator Hoffman, I don't have that in front of me. I can get that back to the committee. I would note that the governor's budget includes about $1 million increase for snow removal. That's essentially the cost of one major snow event. I think, you know, we often have more than one. They can also use a emergency weather events appropriation that we've made using lapsing balances. I think the governor has a proposal for that this year, but it's smaller than last year because there's less money available. So we can get you the actual spending and bring that back to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
That would be good. That was a subject of the subcommittee this morning at DOT. Took most majority of the time dealing with snow event and Anchorage and related areas. So if you have some information that'll help us on that, we are having those discussions with DOT, what we can do different going forward to alleviate the snow congestion issue. So if we could go back to page 5, I think we're done with the slides other than your, so page 5, down at the bottom where it says, you know, the permanent fund dividend, we got to decide here at the table what that is. It's likely going to be one of those three items listed on the bottom, but historically, at the table here, we've used a 75-25 split over the $914 million would be this year, leaving us in this projection with $55 million amount remaining. But it looks like that $55 million would be absorbed pretty much in dealing with the fire disaster and disaster relief. Your last slide, leaving us zero without addressing the other issues. So it looks like we need to, as we go through this, we're going to have a revenue update on the 15th of March, and we'll see if we pick up any extra room, and then we'll have to, I guess, make a list of all our expenditures and try to prioritize them, what we're going to do. Senator Hoffman.
And Mr. Painter, can you also provide a number for the committee of the buffer that we used for the last 5 years or so? Because, you know, if we had a buffer without all those other things that the chairman mentioned, we'd be underwater, or we'd be red.
Through the chair, Senator Hoffman, yes, we can provide that. So, and one thing I'd note on that is that in some years we had, you know, had a balanced budget, but then had access to the CBR with a three-quarter majority as a backstop. If that's not available, then you probably do need to leave a buffer so that if prices end up below the forecast, there's something left. In FY23, we didn't have a very large buffer and had to go back for a CBR vote in the supplemental because prices dropped. So that's a scenario that we recently witnessed.
I think we're going to operate under the scenario that we don't have a three-quarter vote, and we want to ensure that we meet our obligations with a little bit of a buffer for the surprises along the way for a supplemental, unless we can't make it work. Any other questions for the Ledge Finance? Senator Hoffman.
Other than that, everything else looks rosy.
Everything looks good. Well, I'd like to thank Mr. Painter for coming. I thought it would be important today to have this hearing to give the legislature kind of a heads up of what we're dealing with. I'd also like to note we don't have in the discussion today any set aside for fiscal notes as a dollar target. So it seems like almost all legislation has a cost, and that also is challenging in the environment like we have today. So any other final comments, Mr. Painter, before we adjourn?
No, Mr. Chairman. Thank you for having me.
Okay. Thank you for presenting today. Our next hearing will be at 1:30 this afternoon. We're going to take up three pieces of legislation: House Bill 26, Council for Alaska Native Languages; Senate Bill 91, Telehealth, Multidisciplinary Care Team; Senate Bill 132, Employment Tax for Education Facilities. It'll be at 1:30 today, so we are convened at 9:47 a.m. We are adjourned. We'll reconvene at 1:30. We're adjourned.